Hello again there, folks. So for quite a while now, the most requested movie for me to take a look at and do a bit of an analysis of has been consistently the 1975 dystopian science fiction movie called Rollerball, which stars James Caan and was directed by Norman Jewison, who isn't what you might think, though James Caan is. And Jewison also did Jesus Christ Superstar in the 1970s. And Rollerball sits firmly in the canon of the late 60s and the 70s, in which Hollywood seemed to develop this fixation and even almost obsession with making downbeat and gloomy predictions about the future and about all different various ways that humanity was going to end up in the future. Soylent Green was a movie that I covered last year. Planet of the Apes was a little bit earlier, at the late 60s. There's so many of them. I mean, a lot of them seem to star Charlton Heston as well, going into his sort of autumn years. And Rollerball sits well and truly within that canon, and first of all, I think when we approach these things, the way to ease our way in is not to get instantly bogged down with plot lines and characters. I mean, as far as characters, Rollerball is actually quite straightforward. But in terms of the world building, I think that's something that has to be got into first, so we kind of know where we are and the mythology of the world of Rollerball and what it's actually set in. So what we find in the world of Rollerball is that in the future, which is never clearly defined how far in the future, but in the future at any rate, humanity lives under this very affluent and comfortable technocracy. Basically, corporations have taken over everything and they dictate everything about human life. And it's alluded to throughout that there was, at some point in the distant future, which we don't know about, there was what they call the National Wars, which was wars between nations, but the nations ended up bankrupting themselves. And then after that, the corporations came in, presumably because they owned all of the debt to the nations. And the corporations themselves had a corporate, what they call a corporation war. And eventually it's led to where humanity now lives under a sort of, well, it's not even a one world government. It's basically corporations just run the planet. And everybody's very comfortable and everybody's well off, but they're not allowed to have any upward mobility because it was seen, and this is something which is discussed in the movie, that the whole purpose of civilization was to lead towards comfort, where everybody would just have all of their wants and needs met and end up in this affluent and comfortable materialistic consumer society, and then they wouldn't have to make any tough decisions and they wouldn't face any hardship, and that should be enough. I mean, funny enough, speaking of the movies from the 1970s, I was actually reminded of Network and the famous speech about where Mr. Beale has actually meddled with powers that he shouldn't have. And this is also written down into the lore of the world of Rollerball, which is that the corporations say the quote, corporate society takes care of everything. All it asks of anyone, all it's ever asked of anyone, is not to interfere with management decisions. So it isn't that it's some sort of Orwellian police state, there's not people being dragged off to gulags and things, but it is that absolutely everything has been commodified. Even marriages and relationships are all subject, they're just a sort of, they're just transactions. They're just fine. Everything is just a financial transaction. Everything has been commodified. Now, the problem with this, and I can also kind of see why people ask me to look at this movie so often, but it's also that the problem that they have then is that humanity needs to have its attention diverted. Humanity needs a certain bloodlust to be satiated, and the means by which the corporations, there's about seven of them who run the world, have come up with is a blood sport called Rollerball. And Rollerball is kind of a cross between American football and speed skating, but with lots of death and motorbikes. And the ball itself is like a heavy, small, it's like a cannonball, and it gets blasted out and goes around, and they have to score points. Well, the purpose of this is that the masses need an outlet, because national wars, wars between nations, they've been done away with. Tribal identity has also been done away with. And so instead, they can use rollerball as a proxy for older feuds or tribalism, or just to get the bloodlust of the masses will be met in the rink of rollerball, which is an amazingly violent sport. This is where I would say, like, the masculinity involved in rollerball would it wouldn't suit, because it's obvious you can think, well, this is like how we're living today, but what they got wrong in the 70s was just how emasculated society would become, how emasculated a society based on those values would become as well, where there is no struggle. And so the rollerball is there to sort of meet that need in this society. So the purpose of rollerball is explicitly bread and circuses. It is explicitly to create the circuses by which the masses can be subdued, just like the gladiators in Rome, or in a recent video I did on Britain's Got Talent today. And the problems begin to arise in the world of in the movie. What the plot centres on is that James Caan's character is the greatest player of rollerball, which is a team sport, which is important. He's the greatest player in the history of rollerball, and he's managed to survive 10 years, whereas normally a man would be dead within just a few years. And so he's celebrating a victory, and then the corporate elite, if you like, come to meet him in the guise of Bartholomew, and Bartholomew has a meeting with him and says that he has to retire. It's time for him to retire from the sport, but it's never explained to Jonathan E., why he has to retire. And so this is where the normal analysis of rollerball will be that it's a struggle of the individual will over the system. And he doesn't like being told that he has to retire, and he just refuses. For whatever reason, the oligarchy, the corporations, can't actually just force him into retirement. He has to make that choice of his own. But okay, whatever. It's a bit clunky in places. But so he doesn't retire, and he carries on playing rollerball, and he carries on winning. And what we see is that the tournaments and the games then get more and more bloody, and the corporations change the rules to make it more bloody, so that there's a higher chance that Jonathan E. actually gets killed. Jonathan E. himself begins to doubt the system, because he had his wife taken away from him for another corporate fat cat, another oligarch had his eye on his wife, which was, of course, the marriage was just transactional. There's no such thing as love and feeling anymore. Everything's just a commodity. And so his wife was taken away from him, and he didn't really have a way to complain about it, though it did wound him deeply. So now he kind of indulged himself in rollerball. And what we find is that once again, the oligarchs are coming down on him and trying to take that too away from him. And he decides that he's not going to do it. He's going to carry on playing for the love of the game, because he doesn't have much else in his life. But what he also begins to do is doubt the system, and he goes off looking for answers as to why the world is the way it is. And this leads him to go to a library where he wants to read up on the history of the world. And then he's told, again, it's very strange, the similarities, but he's then told that all of the books that no longer exist in physical form, and that they've all been digitized into a supercomputer, which is owned by the corporations. So then he goes and finds the computer itself, and he discovers that the history of the corporation wars has been deleted. And there's also a joke thrown in there. Ralph Richardson is like the safeguard, the guardian of the supercomputer, and he makes the quip that he's by accident, he's just deleted the entire history of the 13th century. And so this is obviously like what we are today with something like Google, where the entire history of a century of a form of art could just be deleted with a mouse click, or a change of the algorithm may well see the disappearance of, say, the Punic Wars or something. This is all like exactly how we're living now, and it's astonishing. Just, you know, sometimes the thing about these movies is that, and Rollerball is one of them, where the messaging is just so on the nose that people will say, is it that the elites, the people in Hollywood, are they actually laughing at us? Or can they, are they giving the game away in the media, in their films, and have they been doing it for decades? So this is up for grabs. But where I disagree with most of the analysis of Rollerball, which I'll come to later, is in the that it is just all about individuality. I think there's a twist in the tail to this. I think essentially the joke is on us. And so what happens is the tournaments go on, they get more and more bloody, and the corporations begin to get more and more worried. Now, the reason they give for that, which John, it's explained to him later on, that the problem they have is that they need the masses subdued, and they don't need anybody to be bigger and more popular than the corporations themselves. So while out on the rink in Rollerball, he is, Jonathan E is supposed to be just part of the team which represents Houston, which is sponsored by one of the corporations. But the problem is he's becoming such a superstar that the system begins to fear what in essence would be a populist backlash, that eventually he could lead some sort of populist rebellion against the oligarchs themselves, and so they just want him to retire and get lost. Even though they do say, we'll give you everything you want, he doesn't. And there's a questions raised over the nature of free will when you are very comfortable, when you are in living in this very affluent and soft society. Is that enough? What happens when you decide that that isn't enough? And this is where he has eventually they dangle his ex-wife back in front of him and say, well, you can have her back, all you've got to do is retire. And then he realizes that it's also still just part of a transaction from her point of view, and he refuses again. But what she, for her part, says that being comfortable is the whole part, or is the whole point of civilization. And Jonathan E. questions this and actually rejects it completely. And so in the end, he's left, in the end, the biggest game is a complete bloodbath because they've completely changed the rules. But the people cheer on John as he, in the end, scores a goal. Now, like so many of these movies, the ending is left kind of ambiguous, and you're left thinking, what actually happened there? What was it that they were trying to say? And I think there's actually three different layers, three different readings of Rollerball. So the most basic reading of Rollerball is that it is just what it says on the tin. In other words, it's just a violent sports movie with a bit of science fiction thrown in there, and it will appeal directly to the people who are invested in bread and circuses, or the circuses in this case, side of this in the real world. Sort of John Bull six-pack, or people who, all the masses who go to American football games or watch football in Europe, all of these huge mass sports spectacles, which is exactly what Rollerball is. It's there to occupy the masses and keep them happy and give them something to do. And it's this cynical ploy by the corporations in this case now. That's certainly the case now with sport in Europe and sport in America. It's there to pacify the masses. So this acts as the circuses. And in a strange way, it's almost like a parody of that, because Rollerball is just so violent and bloodthirsty that it's almost like they are actually watching a joke on them. But then there's a more middlebrow take on it, which is questions the nature of the West. It questions capitalism and the entertainment industry, and the entertainment industry as a whole is there to mollify and pacify the masses as they consume. It's all part of the same process. This I think is a more middlebrow viewing of it, where they would pick up all of these cues and all of these interesting back and forths about, well, is the purpose of society and is the purpose of life just to be comfortable? What happens if I want more than that? Where does that leave me in capitalist society? Where does that leave me if it just isn't enough, if I need more? Which is, of course, to a degree manifest through Jonathan E's individualism. This is the so many people will read in this individualistic argument where one man says, well, actually, no, there has to be more to life with this, and that can then spread throughout the population and they all begin to demand change. But actually, and this is the most popular reading of Rollerball, which I've picked up on looking into this, but I actually think there's like something else. I think there is something like a sort of meta joke going on with Rollerball. And in order to get into this, we have to analyse the final part of the movie, which is the bloodbath against New York. And in that case, Jonathan E is the only man left in the rink. And the choice is there. He's standing with the ball, this heavy steel ball, and Bartholomew, the oligarch who brought about this whole situation, he's sitting in the audience. Jonathan E can actually just plant the ball straight into his face and kill him, and then make this really powerful statement, and that would be an individualistic act, but it would be an individualistic act for a higher purpose. What instead happens is that he does wrestle with this for a drawn out scene, but what we see is that he ends up just scoring a point and then skating round and round the rink, and the movie ends. And this reminded me of, just to go off on a bit of a tangent, of an interesting discussion which happens in left-wing intellectuals' circles, which is called Left-Wing Melancholia, which was an essay by Walter Benjamin of the Frankfurt School. And it's in some ways a critique or an observation on older Marxists and socialists on the left, where when we look in the world today, it's as if the left is just completely hegemonic. It's as if they have won everything. They're everywhere. Their ideas are dominant. You get deplatformed if you disagree with them. It seems they just win victory after victory. In actual fact, within left-wing academic circles, the older school of leftism, the classic Marxism, is there's a profoundly depressed streak which runs through it. And the reason for that is because their ideology was a forward-looking one. It was progressive, let's say. The world was always going to end up in socialism. That was always inevitable. That was an inevitability of the future, that it would be Marxist or socialist to one degree or another. And what you actually see is that from their point of view, not only did that never happen, but it's further away from ever happening ever. I mean, at the start of this video, you got the sense that, yeah, we are living in this kind of corporate global oligarchy of international finance and these giant corporations. Like, that rings true to us today. So from the point of view of an old school leftist, it can be seen that their future has been erased completely. It just didn't happen. And so this has left this, which I'll get into in more depth in some other point, this deep kind of left-wing melancholia, as if the future was taken away from them. But then on top of that, what we also see is that every attempt made to undermine or attack capitalism has been a failure. But even on top of that, it has been where the system, the capitalist system, from their perspective, has just absorbed the critique or the counter narratives and then repackaged them and sold them as product back to the base. Perfect example of this would be the Che Guevara t-shirts, where you have this Marxist revolutionary and he ends up just being a capitalist product which is being sold on again as a commodity. So whatever they threw at capitalism, capitalism would just turn it into a product and become stronger for it. And so with all of that out of the way, we can now go back to Rollerball and Jonathan E's rebellion against the system by carrying on playing Rollerball and doing better at it, and becoming more popular in it than anybody has ever been before. He's then at the end, so Rollerball is a way to pacify the masses so they won't turn on and question the system. Jonathan E carries on playing out of his own free will and his own sense of individuality, that he isn't going to be bossed around, he isn't going to be told what to do by the oligarchs. And so he continues playing the game, making the game more popular, but at the same time, he's also getting the masses more invested in the game. And so when the time comes at the end and he's left with the choice to throw the ball through the oligarch's face and kill him and then sacrifice himself and send the whole society into chaos effectively and create some genuine form of questioning and critique of the system which he would facilitate, that's not actually what happens. What he does is score a point. So he scores a point and reaffirms the game. He reaffirms Rollerball. He reaffirms the circuses, which is keeping everybody subdued and mollified and pacified in the face of the corporate technocracy that they all live under. They're never going to question that because they've just become more invested in the game. And this is the individualist argument failing, in my view, because he had the choice. Jonathan, he had the choice before him, and he did indeed choose his individuality. But what a puny argument for individuality that is, because for individualism rather, because what he's done is choose his own ego and to be a hero and to have everybody never then question the system, just become more invested in the dopamine of Rollerball, when instead he could have killed the oligarch with the ball. Nothing happened. And this to me is the joke. This to is the equivalent of the Che Guevara t-shirt for $15. The system has only become stronger because of Jonathan E's rebellion, not weaker. And this is the inside joke that I think's been played with this movie, because at the end, they're all chanting his name. He's the hero. They love the game. They love the sport more than ever before. Never before has a criticism or a rebellion against the system been further away. And the final joke, in my view, is the nature of the Rollerball arena itself and how that's been filmed, which is that the final scene of the movie is Jonathan E scoring the point and then just going round and round the rink, just in a circle, round and round in the rink, not going anywhere. Nobody's going anywhere. He's just like a rat in a maze. And this is where his sense of individuality, the glorying in his own ego, has led him and led the system into a complete dead end. And that's the joke. The joke's on us. The joke's on the people cheering him on, when in actual fact, they're cheering on their own enslavement. Thanks for listening, folks, and I'll catch you later.